This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro. Welcome to the number one news source covering the only news that matters. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. At the news desk, I am Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my co-anchor, Chris Sinzak.
How you doing?
I'm ready to bring the news.
Yeah, we have the greatest news in the world with some special guests today.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to break it all down for you. You're going to feel all caught up. Everything's going to be good in the world. But before we get to all that, you know us. We got to take care of our business. And what's our business? It's reviews, baby. We need them. You can give them to us. And we've got a couple of them right here that are pretty sweet. This first one comes to us. It's an Apple Podcast review. And it's entitled Greatness. Oh, I like where this is going already. Comes to us from Dead Flowers, and it goes a little something like this. This is the greatest podcast in the world.
I agree.
Wow.
The world.
If you like rock or metal, you will dig this. In fact, if you don't even like music at all, you will dig it, because it's just that good. So go ahead and hit subscribe and treat yourself to some podcast goodness.
Thank you, Dead Flowers.
Wow, nice.
That's a hell of a review.
In the world.
One said we were the greatest in the universe. This one says we're the greatest in the world. So which is the accurate assessment?
I'll take either one.
Either one works.
Either one's good for me. Hey, look at this. It's a Podchaser review.
I know. It's like seeing a unicorn.
It's got 5 stars. Mm-hmm. They're pink. It's the real deal. Let's check it out. It goes like this. The Decibel Geek Podcast is nothing short of a blast. A fun-filled ride through rock and metal that dives deep into the knowledge of the music and its players that only Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro can deliver each week. They serve up interesting guests and fun-filled episodes. Recognition of the fans is also paramount. Weekly, they recognize the Geeks of the Week. Looking at you, Mooger Fooger. And they have even gone on to bring us the Rockin' Pod Expo, a fun interactive experience with live performances and a chance to meet some talented and cool people. Be sure to listen. You will become a fan. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, that comes from my brother.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
How much do we owe him?
That's between me and him.
Oh, okay, yeah, good.
Nothing
good
to do with you.
You cover the brotherly fee when it comes to leaving sweet reviews like that one.
But yeah, he actually... He's starting his own podcast soon also, so I'll be updating people with
is
that.
Is it about Star Wars?
In part.
Yeah?
Pop culture, Star
okay,
Wars,
cool.
A lot of different stuff.
He's the perfect guy to do something like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think I heard he just recently did an episode of Damn Good Movie Memories with Brian Davis.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Got to check that out.
Yeah.
Eric Sinzak breaking into the podcast world.
He's trying to usurp my popularity. That's a callback from, what, over 2 years ago now.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, our other favorite people, of course, you know them. They're the Geeks of the Week. They're the people that go out and they share and retweet the episodes for us. We got some great ones from last week. A little more popular than I expected. I was scared it was going to be Bracket Brawl 2.
Yeah, it was definitely a kind of a fish out of water experience for us, but I think it came off pretty good. People
nice.
Seem to enjoy it.
Good deal.
Geeks of the Week this week are Warren Edward LaRue Baker, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Jason Smith, Greg Troyan, David Glenn, Jay Shablewski, Trevor McDougal, Wayne Cross, Joseph Capone, Mike Parnell, Sean Cullen, Adam Cox, Mark Alden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Shane Hebert, Todd Cunningham, Scott Smith, Simon Catt, Mikhail Burrell, Andy LaFon, Nate Atchison, Aaron Baker, The Bakery Podcast, Kevin Williams, and In Obscuria Podcast, Bill Elam, Rodney Dixon, Kristen Schimbeck, Shay Hargett, Paul Korn, Greg McGlone, Chuck Noseworthy, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. That's right. Those are our people, right. Our best friends of the whole damn world, our Geeks of the Week. They shared last week's episode, and you can become an honorary Geek of the Week by sharing this week's episode as we bring you the new noise.
Yes. So
what volume is this?
Number 7.
Nice.
It's one of those things where, like, it's been quite a week for rock music news, so it seemed like as good a time as ever to do one of these. And, there's a lot to cover today. And also, recent transplant to Nashville from Philadelphia, I believe. Mr. Bay Ragney from Totally Driven Entertainment. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thank you, guys. This is, like, such a friggin' honor. I'm so stoked. And I feel like part of the Nashville family now, so this is going
to
be fun.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
It's your official introduction.
Is this like the Nashville Rock and Roll Mafia?
It is now that you guys are here.
We're probably the poorest mafia there is, but okay.
I can back that up for sure.
fits in perfectly.
Yeah. And also on mic today, Dave Tedder. And Dave goes back in the music industry sometime working in the record business. And can you give people a little update on basically where you started and where you're at now?
Hi.
That's a great summation, Dave.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, no, I started out at Enigma Records back in 88 when I moved to L.A. from Germany. You know, we had Poison, we had Stryper, we had The Replacements, we had David Cassidy, you know, bands like that. Of course, you guys, your fans would know Poison and Stryper
of course.
Most of the stuff we did, maybe Mass and some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I've got Headfirst Entertainment, PR company, management company, 20th Century Music, reissue company. We've done 14 albums in 3 years so far. We have two more coming out in January and about 10 more in like various stages of completion.
Right.
And then parent company to that is Vanity Music Group, which is more of a modern rock type label.
Yeah. And you're in town. What are you – are you scouting somebody this week?
I've got meetings. One of my management clients, whom I can't name yet – wanted me to put together a Boston tribute band.
Oh, wow.
And he doesn't live here in Nashville, but he said, put it together in Nashville.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Well, no shortage of players.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Somebody pull off Boston tunes, you're in the right place because there's all kinds of great musicians here in Music City.
Yep, he was either here or Vegas. He lives closer to here, so... Nice. Makes more sense to do it here.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, every time Dave's in town, we usually get together for a beer, and he always regales me with hilarious stories of his time in music. So I figured he was coming into town. We were trying to figure out where to meet up. So I'm like, Aaron, why don't we just record with everybody?
That's perfect.
Just work that way. And I know you guys will have opinions on all of these stories that we're going to cover today. So.
I can't wait to talk about this stuff.
Okay.
I'm never short of opinion.
All right. Well, good. All right. So we ready to get
going? What's our first news story?
The first news story is Wendy Dio says a re-release of Black Sabbath's The Humanizer is coming very soon.
So is that something you can't get now? Is that out of print? Or
I believe that there was a... Let's go through the story a little bit. So the Church of What's Happening Now with Joey Coco Diaz did an interview with her on whether Ronnie James Dio had an acrimonious relationship with Ozzy Osbourne. And she says, no, not at all. Come on now.
Well, I mean, at some point there definitely was. I mean, I watched that video where, remember back in the day when Ozzy had the little dwarf on stage?
Yes.
And the dwarf's name
Ronnie.
Was Ronnie.
Yeah, they hated each other.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
And then did you and of course we'll touch on these news headlines and then we'll go off on tangents. But there's a video on YouTube of somebody that did an interview with Ronnie on his tour bus in the 90s. Did you see this interview? Because he goes through every single CD and talks about his thoughts on. And this is right after he came off stage. I think this was around the time Angry Machines was out, and he wasn't in a happy mood that day, and boy, did he spill a lot of shit on this interview.
Really?
It's one of the best interviews I've ever seen with a rock star.
After you look that up.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have anything nice to say about Ozzy Osbourne in that interview, I'll tell you that.
I mean, since he was such the nice guy, that's definitely something you have to see it.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this episode because it's a must-watch for everybody. But she said on Black Sabbath's 1992 album, Dehumanizer, it's a very underrated album, and it's a great album. It came out in the 90s, right when grunge hit, so everybody was now listening to grunge. Actually, we are re-releasing that very soon. That's
cool for people that need it on LP, because that really is a great album.
Oh.
That's really pretty underrated.
In 2011, Universal Sanctuary released a deluxe edition of it, so I don't know if this is going to really be that much different or not.
Yeah.
And I think our friend Victor actually was complaining about the idea that they're re-releasing this album because it's just like what else is there that you could put out with it. But I think I heard I think I heard something about Tony Iommi. Tony Iommi is remixing Forbidden.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Of all the Black Sabbath albums to want to redo, he wants to do that one. Yeah, he's all excited about it, too.
No, why?
I don't get it.
Huh.
Maybe he wants to...
That's a pretty deep cut album that nobody really ever talks about, except that's the one that's got Ice-T
and Ernie C.
And Ernie, yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird record. I don't know. I don't know why you would pick that one, but... All right.
Maybe he thinks he can save it.
Thoughts on Dehumanizer? You guys fans of that album?
I like it. I think it's just packed full of great tracks that nobody ever goes to because it's Dehumanizer. You know?
Yeah, I never go to it.
Yeah, it's kind of a forgotten record. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's not a classic. It's not that piece of crap.
Right.
It's just kind of in the middle there where there's, if I remember, there's like half the record's really great.
Mm-hmm.
The other half is, you know, makes a great EP.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember the video for, was it TV Crimes?
Yep.
I remember the video for that being on Headbangers Ball, but
horrible video.
That's really all I remember. I was kind of checked out of that stuff by that point. I didn't really. Did you buy that record when it came out?
Not when it came out.
No.
No, I discovered that years later when I found it on CD and listened to it. I dig it.
I think it was one of those where even
great stuff on there.
Most metal fans were like, Black Sabbath put an album out? I didn't have no idea. Certainly got no promotion.
With Dio, you know?
Yeah.
That had been quite a while since Dio had done anything with those guys.
Oh, and that tour bus interview, they get into the whole thing about the making of that record and then how it all fell apart right after because the band wanted to open for Ozzy with Ronnie singing. Ronnie was like, fuck that.
Right.
I'm not doing that.
And that's when Ronnie left the band and
Rob Halford filled in.
So it was Rob Halford singing with Sabbath, doing Sabbath tunes.
Which is great.
It's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the next story.
I want
to
know real quick, though, what's your opinion on Wendy Dio? Like compare Wendy Dio to Sharon Osbourne. Like,
Wendy Dio is much nicer, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Wendy seems like a nicer person than Sharon. Sharon seems pretty nasty as a human. But I don't know. It's kind of questionable with some of the decisions Wendy makes. I mean, it's... Well, there's clearly cash grab stuff going
on. Absolutely.
Sharon is definitely more, not definitely more, but more business minded, I guess. Like, she does everything just for money.
Oh, yeah.
And Wendy does it with her heart.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
An outsider looking in here, I truly want to respect your opinion. Do you really feel it's that?
I think so,
truly from the heart?
Yeah, she does some really stupid things that she thinks will succeed because it's whatever it might be.
Okay.
She's not thinking, okay, this is going to make us $1 million. She's like, this will do well because I think it's great.
Yeah.
So.
Do we think she was smart to do the hologram?
Fuck no.
Do you think it was a cash grab? See, that's what I think that whole thing was just a cash grab.
Totally.
But I've heard interviews with her where she does genuinely sound like she's wanting to do this for people that never got to see him live. Like,
she seems
sincere in her desire to do that.
That's with her heart right there.
So because when I first saw the announcement, I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, nope.
But when I've heard her talk a couple of times on other podcasts about it, I'm like, yeah, she does sound like her heart's in the right place with this. So, because I know they can't be making that much money off of that. I'm sure the technology costs a fortune just to start it up.
Yeah.
And they're only playing in little clubs.
Yeah.
And I think I heard Ralph went to see it in Florida and he said the club wasn't even full.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's making any money.
Go. Mm-mm.
Because they have to employ the band and every, you know, Craig Goldie's out there playing and
right,
you know, so it can't be much of a moneymaker, I would imagine.
No.
The world's not ready for holograms yet.
Nah.
I'm ready for a Paul Stanley hologram that can sing.
Well, if it could sing, it wouldn't be a hologram, now would it?
That's true.
It wouldn't be a true hologram.
We'll get to Kiss later. I guess the tape's already being used, so what's the difference? All right. One of the other big stories this week was the Black Crowes announcing a big reunion, but even though the reunion is really just between the Robinson brothers.
Yeah, right.
And this headline kind of made me laugh, or made me initially think of a sarcastic joke. It says, "The Black Crowes' Rich Robinson on reconnecting with brother Chris. Family is more important than anything else. Take out the word family and insert money." And I think you'll have the real reason all this is going on. Is anyone excited about seeing the Black Crowes brothers play together again without the other guys?
Nope.
No.
I'm not a big Black Crowes person at all. Yeah.
I mean, I liked the band, but I never saw them back then. To me, they were a B-rate version of the Choir Boys.
Hmm.
Both came out around the same time. Yeah. The Black Crowes exploded over here.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The Choir Boys got left in the dust.
Right.
And not really the other way around over there. I mean, the Choir Boys were really big in England.
Yeah, but I don't...
The Black Crowes kind of were, too.
I don't remember anything from the Choir Boys that, like, radio-wise, was as strong as anything the Black Crowes did.
Yeah.
But that entire first record was phenomenal. Yeah. But they didn't have it too hard to handle. They didn't have... Angels.
Right.
She talks to angels. Yeah. They didn't have those.
No. Right.
But that was it. They had the other single, whatever the third one was. I can't remember the name. Also a really good song.
Jealous Again?
That's it, Jealous Again. Yeah. Also a really good song. Really good song.
Yeah.
So the Choir Boys didn't have anything that strong as those three songs. But those two albums side by side, Choir Boys by 500 Miles.
I'm listening to the audio version of Steve Gorman's autobiography that just came out, the drummer from The Crows.
Yep.
And he mentions that he's like, when we started out, that's who we got compared to all the time was the London Choir Boys.
Wow. I mean, yeah.
And he's like, but we never, he's like, we never thought we were the same. But
yeah.
Huh.
I thought it was just like a select bunch of people that were so into the scene, so to speak.
That was the band name that would come up all the time when they were starting out was, you guys sound like the London Choir Boys.
They should have fucking toured together.
Yeah. Well, and there's some funny stories in this book about, you know, they got put on a lot of hair band tours during this time because that was what was big.
Right, and they were blues band.
And they hated all those bands. Like they did a tour with, I told you about this the other day, Dogs D'Amour in England. And he said they just couldn't stand them, and neither band liked each other. And the Dogs D'Amour, I guess, were headlining
like
theaters.
Like, personally couldn't stand each other,
yes.
Or just musically?
Both. Yeah, they didn't like – none of them got along.
Yeah.
And the Dogs D'Amour fans were not fans of the Black Crowes. Yeah. Like, booed them off stage every night.
Right, yeah.
And they were in the dressing room before one of the shows, and the bass player for Dogs D'Amour walks in with a bottle of Jack Daniels, and you know, he's got his hair all teased out and everything. He stares at him and – kind of laughs at them, takes a big swig off his whiskey bottle, and then walks out. And like he was thinking he was intimidating the band. And
right.
He said the minute he walked out the door, the whole room just burst into laughing. Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck ever, dude? You
know? I'll take the Dynamite Jet Saloon, though, over to Black Crowes any day.
Yeah.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the Choir Boys, though, were more comfortable with bands like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were friends with the Dogs D'Amour. They were friends with Marionette. Mm-hmm. They were friends with My Guys and Tiger Tales, like, except for Steve and Phil, of course. But Nigel, of course, they used to beat each other up. But they fit into that hair band. I hate that term.
Yeah.
The glam category, even though they weren't a glam band.
Yeah.
Right.
And they didn't really, you know, they didn't really fit in with the blues guys. So...
Yeah, it's kind of like a Rolling Stones type, mm-hmm. you know, or Hanoi Rocks feel, I guess you could say.
Yeah, fronted by Rod Stewart.
Yeah. But I don't know. We had David Hudson on from State of Amorca, and we did a whole Black Crowes episode. I've learned to appreciate their stuff a little bit more from that.
Yeah, for sure.
But
again, I think you're right if you're saying it's all about the money, it's not about the family, because when you're with a band like that for that many years –
yeah.
That kind of becomes the family, you know, especially in the context of this, the band. So if it really is about family and it's not about money, then you get the original members back.
Right.
Yeah.
And give them their fair cut.
Yeah.
This is the two guys trying to keep all the money for themselves.
Absolutely.
If we just get a couple of players, we can pay them a lot more than paying the real deal.
Yeah.
Well, and that's actually on a much smaller scale. I'm not going to name bands because I'll get emails all fucking day from people.
But, oh, come on. I need a blabbermouth.
You're the guy to give it to.
That's why you're here.
But they, that's going to be on a much more grand scale, of course. They're playing theaters and stuff. But a lot of these bands from LA back in the 80s, bands that are around today are just the singer and three friends that you can pay $100.
Sure.
Right.
They're making $1,500 or $2,000 on a gig.
Right.
Well, these three guys are getting $100.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the rest of it because I'm whatever I, the drummer, the singer, whatever I was.
Right.
Right.
And I'm the original guy. I'm what they're coming for.
Yeah.
So you guys could wash dishes this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Or go back to washing dishes this weekend.
Right.
Or join me on the road for the next 2 weeks. What do you want to do? You're getting paid the same amount either way.
Well, and listening to this audio, but good God, what one of the most dysfunctional bands of all time. Like, knock down, drag out fights on a regular basis through their whole career, mostly between the brothers, which tells you they must be getting paid a fucking
fortune to do this tour. Yeah,
and
it's like Oasis.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if they survive it, because like even the money may not be enough to keep those two together.
Yeah, I was honestly shocked when the news came out the other day about it. I was like, whoa, and because you heard so much bad blood and bad things said between the two of them, and then right away you think to yourself, what is it, 30 years? Cash grab.
It's totally cash grab.
It's like, were fences mended or is money needed? It's money needed.
Yeah.
For sure, you know?
But I would my wife still wants to go, so I may end up having to get tickets to it. She's like, I want to go see it. I'm like, it's just the two guys. I don't care. I just want to hear the songs. I'm like, yeah.
Here's a CD.
Yeah, here's an album.
It's YouTube. Let's see. There's probably a concert from 93. Yeah, there's one right there.
All the original members.
But yeah, we'll see. I will. Yeah, highly recommend Steve Gorman's book, though. It's loaded with great stories.
Yeah, really, and if you're a Black Girls really fan, D-Hud just talked to Gorman on his show. So
yeah, big headlines from that one.
For
it, yeah. Yep. All right. So next story, I know we all have a vested interest in this band. Motley Crue fuels reunion rumors by promoting an online petition.
How can they do that when they already made such a big deal about there's going to be no more?
They signed a contract, guys.
Right, in front of everyone.
They can't do this.
Contracts mean nothing. Trust me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's go through the story a little bit. Motley Crue has fueled rumors of a possible reunion by promoting an online petition asking the group to come back. In 2015, they completed the final tour, closing the book on the band's iconic career after performing a total of 164 shows in 72 markets, grossing over $100 million. Jesus. To cement the legacy of the finality, four members signed a cessation of touring contract that prevents any of them performing under the Crue name in the future. On Friday, Motley's official Twitter account shared a link to a change.org petition started by Motley Man and included the following brief message. This is interesting. And the petition, which was launched 4 days ago, Motley Man writes, after breaking the
Motley Man,
I can't read this with a straight face. It's like the worst superhero of all time. After does nothing,
he shows up and causes more problems.
That's what they usually do. Okay.
The ability to drink to excess. After breaking the replay button on the Dirt film, it is clear to me that the only way to fulfill my urge for the crew is for you guys to get back on the road. I know it's not just me with this opinion. Your movie has once again put you in the spotlight and blah, 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 blah. So they shared the link to this, and suddenly that means that there's a reunion. But there's also a rumor going around that that there's a Motley Crue Poison and Def Leppard tour being put together. I don't think it's happening.
No.
I don't think those guys are ever going to tour again. This is just wishful thinking on some people's part. I don't see Motley ever getting back together.
Bret Michaels is Motley Man.
Yes.
God, he's trying to get the ball rolling.
Yeah. I need a gig, damn it.
I think it's going to happen.
You do?
I really do.
I don't think so.
I really do.
I think you're one in four here.
You know what? Like, there's the rumor. There was the rumor the other day that like $150 million was offered to them. Yeah. If that money's being offered to them, do you think they're turning it down?
No.
They're definitely not, but I don't think it's actually being offered. I mean, someone posted.
Yeah, Vince had to lose like 40 pounds.
Well,
and
that
he had
too.
To go to
rehab.
Vince went ballistic when he heard about this.
That's never going to happen, first off. I mean, hopefully he loses the weight for his health.
Well,
but the singing properly will never happen because why?
He never could.
He never could. Like, you go back to the Shout of the Devil tour, which is the one that everybody saw them on. He never sang every fucking song.
Yeah.
Right. He would sing two lines. Mm. You would sing the rest. They would do the chorus.
Yeah.
And that's that's his charisma, I guess.
Right.
That's what made him Vince. The other thing, somebody posted on, like, shared a thing on Facebook the other day that said, Vince is tweeting that it's all BS.
Yeah.
I'm not fighting with Tommy. We're not doing this thing with Poison. Who was the band? Def Leppard. I already forgot. You don't believe what you read. But then again, somebody else said that Nikki, fueling everything, said, you know, things like encrypted messages or cryptic messages.
Right.
You know, making you think that it's happening.
Nikki and Tommy have been pretty quiet. Yeah, but Nikki and Tommy have been pretty quiet over this whole thing, too.
Yeah. But he does little things like that, though. He always has.
Yeah.
Even back in print magazines.
Yeah.
You know, he would say
everything I ever said about Poison.
Right. Exactly. I love Bobby. I love him. He's my best friend.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Motley's made kind of a career out of dogging Poison.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be odd to see them on the road together.
But also, I don't think that it's a stadium tour.
It's
no,
not.
It's not going to sell stadiums.
Tour.
No.
It wouldn't be that big a deal.
The tickets would be $500 each.
Yeah.
Because it all, you know, what are the guarantees?
Got to be insane. For those three bands.
It's not 1990. They're not the biggest bands in the world anymore.
Yeah.
They're not going to fill stadiums. That's 40,000 plus people a night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
If they did four shows, California, Florida, New York, Chicago, Illinois.
Do four giant shows.
Do four things. Yeah. It's going to be a carnival atmosphere anyway. So do the whole Lollapalooza thingy. What, you know, the vendors and shit. Charge a ton of money and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to be able to fill stadiums. Arenas, every, you know, four nights a week. It ain't going to happen. It's just not going to.
Yeah.
Especially when, A, again, they're not the biggest bands in the world anymore.
Right.
And B, the tickets will be $500.
Yeah.
You know? When somebody looks at spending that kind of money to go to a show, I mean, it's almost got to be something spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sorry, guys, I love all three bands.
That's not spectacular.
Ain't spectacular.
Which band do you think would truly be the best band, performance-wise?
Well, Def Leppard, but that would be because of the tape.
By 6,000 miles.
But they have tape backing vocals.
Yeah.
I mean, and even Joe's.
Well, they all
Joe's voice is shot, though. Yeah,
it's been shot for a
while. Well, that's one thing. Like, like Bret Michaels has never been a great singer, but at least he's still out there genuinely doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah.
He doesn't use tapes.
You know. It's always funny that Motley Crue used tapes for everything but the vocals. And what do they need tapes for? The
vocals.
Exactly. If I'm the sound man, I'm like, there's something wrong with this picture. like, I heard Nikki doesn't even play bass live anymore. Wow. It's all tapes.
I heard that too, but yeah. Wow.
And how hard is it to play Motley Crue bass lines? Come on.
Not exactly...
He'd be like the dude from D.A.D., just two strings.
Right, yeah, exactly.
With a helmet that shoots fire.
Two strings and four notes.
Oh, man. So who would buy a ticket to that tour?
Nope.
I mean, I would, but it would have to be pretty affordable.
Yeah.
I mean, $20. I definitely would. Yeah, $20. I'm there.
Yeah. Would it appear on Groupon?
Right.
Groupon.
It would most assuredly appear on Groupon.
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 Oh, nobody's going to top that one.
Thank you. I'm going home.
That was the Nestle Geek Podcast.
Oh, that was good.
We're done. I'm out. I quit on my head.
Okay. So, next story. Eddie Van Halen photographed at spinal neurosurgeon's office.
I hadn't heard that one.
And, Eddie Van Halen was recently photographed with Dr. Todd Landman in Beverly Hills. Landman, one of the world's chief spinal neurosurgeons, shared the picture on social media, writing, "Great seeing Eddie Van Halen in my office yesterday." Landman, who did not disclose the reason for Eddie's visit, has become one of the world's leading innovators in spine surgery and motion preservation. Interesting. And have you guys seen the photo that went along with this? Mm-hmm. The photo of Eddie, like his face is very swollen.
Yeah.
He's got what you call moon face, and a lot of people seem to think that he's on prednisone or something along, like a steroid that's causing his face to swell up. I don't know why he'd be at a spinal neurosurgeon thing, but his face being swollen scares me because there's been those rumors about the tongue cancer coming back, and that could be also from tumors and if you're getting chemo on your mouth. So I don't know. What do we think about Eddie Van Halen? Do we think the rumors are true, or do you think this is overblown?
I think we all pool everything we've got and figure out a way, if there is an immortality spell, that we use it on Eddie Van Halen. I mean, I think that's clearly the obvious choice.
It's a good start, for sure. Yeah.
Really?
Got him right up there. I mean, maybe not.
I'm not wasting it on that on Eddie Van Halen.
Disagrees with
Eddie or your grandmother, either way.
Or Ozzy or somebody, I don't know.
Ozzy gets it before Eddie.
But it's just sad because it's you know, everybody's getting older, all our favorite rock stars. I mean, eventually, I mean, we're already living in a world without Lemmy. We're living in a world without Ronnie James Dio. You know, the list goes on and on and on and on. And every day we get older, we're losing more of our legends.
Yeah.
There ain't a damn thing we can do about it.
Nope.
Dude, those words hurt. A world without Lemmy.
Yeah.
That hurt. Right. Like, the reality of that hurts.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even really a big Motorhead fan, but, I mean, he's Lemmy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Everyone respected him.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say anything negative about Lemmy, ever.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who it was. I don't know, Dave, did you ever have any run-ins with Eddie Van Halen over the years?
Never.
No?
Not even one.
Hmm.
Which is, and none of those guys, actually.
Oh, really?
No,
they all seem to stay to themselves pretty well.
Yeah.
Hmm. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, hopefully he's okay.
He don't look good. I mean, even like his skin, like the color of his skin, he doesn't have it. It doesn't look good at all. I mean, it looks kind of, I don't know if it's jaundice or something, like the gray, just something don't look good at all. And like you're saying, like the puffiness, like I was on prednisone for 6 months at one point, and it's no good.
I was on it for a while too.
Yeah.
And it's bad stuff.
Yeah.
They yanked me off as soon as they could.
So one of those meds that kind of has to fuck you up to fix what's wrong with you, I guess.
It fucks you up even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so sending out good thoughts to Eddie. I hope he's okay. But that's going to be a sad day when we lose him.
Yeah. Yep.
Here's an interesting story, certainly not on the same level as Eddie Van Halen, but Bang Tango's original lineup is going to reunite for select shows in 2020. Thoughts on this one?
See, that's about the music, and that's about the family. Yeah. That's not about
They're not making money.
They're not making money.
Yeah.
So they're getting all the original members together.
Just a quick throwback to a few minutes ago when I was talking about, you know, I'm in the band, I'm the recognized name, and you three guys can go along with me.
Yeah.
That's who I was referring to.
Oh,
Joe. That's one of the bands. Yeah. One of the bands I was referring to. It's Joe and, hey, Tommy, what are you doing next weekend? Or next month, I mean.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the bands. So they were, I saw them, like, I think right after they got their deal. I moved to LA in 88.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I think it was right before, right after they got their deal. I think it was right after. And they were fucking phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't a big fan of what they were, like, the alternative metal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but they floored me.
Yeah.
I saw them, like, four times before they took off, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, Joe's, well, depending on what day of the week it is, he's a really good guy. Mm-hmm. But he's just, I think he's just damaged the brand, so to speak, over the past 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
By calling whoever's around.
Yeah.
And taking them out. I mean, I've had good friends playing in Bang Tango.
Our buddy, like, Drew Fortier played with him.
Yeah. Anthony Fox has played there.
Yeah.
I've had other friends in the band, and they're great musicians.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but it's not like those five guys had a chemistry.
Yeah.
And were they the biggest band? Were they even close? No. But they delivered.
Yeah.
And they delivered hard. And with anybody, I mean, you can replace Kyle, one of the Kyles or whatever.
Not Kyle.
You can't. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I mean, you can't. Right, yeah.
He was a big part of that.
Man. Exactly. Yeah. No, I was going to, you're totally right there. Kyle should not have ever been replaced. But, you know, whoever you replace is not going to be the same.
Yeah.
And it never was. Like, I saw them probably half dozen times with, you know, whoever's in the band. And I walked out every time.
I'll tell you what, I saw them like 2 months ago before I moved here from Philly. And I was actually pretty surprised. They were really good. And Joe sounded really good, which I was even more surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly he's been like sober for like a year or two now.
I mean, he's always been pretty good, whether he's wasted or not, when I've seen him. But this it's just like the chemistry wasn't there for me.
Right.
So I would bail like the fourth song every time.
I saw them open for... Was it Faster Pussycat a few months ago?
That's when I saw. Yeah,
and they, I had the opposite experience. I thought they were
really. Terrible. See, I was surprised, but both bands, and it was a Monday night, which even more surprising. Like especially for Philly, the place was packed on a Monday night, and both bands were really good. Like I planned to leave, and I got sucked in. I was like, wow, both bands sounded awesome. I was surprised.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah, real good.
Very rare.
Yeah. Yeah, even Tammy, like, I mean, with Pussycat sounded really, I was shocked.
I've seen them a number of times. They're always good. You know what you're getting whenever you go to see Faster Pussycat.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same show every time, but it's always entertaining. I mean, I've never seen them do a bad set.
Mm.
I'm sure they have, but, you know, I don't know. Bang Tango, I don't know. I could kind of take them or leave them. I'm just someone like you, I remember with the video, who could forget all the neon lines and stuff on the video? I think it was definitely a striking video, but like, it was like, oh, there's Bang Tango, and see you later.
That's pretty much what it was. They're, gone. Like later today.
Well, Drew did
a lot of bands have you, like that back then.
Have you guys seen Drew's documentary about them?
Yes.
Yeah. It's actually really well done.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
And you can watch it for free on YouTube. But they dug a band. It's one of those. So, there's so many of these bands that, especially if you watch that documentary, you'd be like, why the fuck are you guys still trying to do this? Because there's like, especially
that's
through the 90s and early 2000s, it's like no one's listening.
I have the answer to that. And it like hit me one day, probably about 15, 20 years ago, sitting in a club in Philly one night, seeing whatever band it was. And I turned to my buddy and I'm like, I get it now. This is their fucking job.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know nothing else. This is the reality of life. This is their job. And it's not even about like now. It's just about we have to go out and get in a van and like fucking do this to pay our bills.
Yeah.
Right.
Because otherwise they will be working in fucking Starbucks or something.
Yeah. You know? And you know,
or driving Lyft like me.
Right. Exactly. What are you doing for a living? And I think VH1. What were they?
Reunited?
No.
Behind the music.
I think they were responsible for bands actually doing what they're doing now. I have to do music.
Sure.
Because they did the one with Kix. and they showed and nothing against it at all.
Yeah.
Brian Forsyth fucking painting. Why is a Kicks guitarist painting houses?
Yeah.
Because he has to fucking earn money.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why. There's nothing wrong with painting a house.
Not at all.
But it put a shade on that whole.
That's true.
I was a rock star once. Now I'm painting houses. Oh my God. No,
but,
dude.
But even like. I mean, I'm sure you guys noticed too, and Dave, you know, from being in it, like, how many people have you guys interviewed where in the reality of this is most of the people in the music business have day jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're going out on the road and they have some type of computer job or some type of design job, and they're in a van or on a tour bus and they're working while they're on the road.
Oh, yeah.
That's where they're actually making their money from. That's not like from doing music at all.
Nope.
Right. We talked to a guy that was somebody that when we were younger, Chris and I both, he was the lead singer of a band that we owned the CDs of, you know, when we were kids. And talking to him about transitioning into the office life, you know, and what a trip that is to go from being the lead singer of a hot young rock band to now all these years later, you've got to supplement that income because you're not touring. You know, you're not making all that money. You're out doing shots on the weekends.
Right.
But you got to pay the bills.
Yep.
You know, and that's got to be a tough transition.
Yeah. You know, he's got to make money.
Right.
You know, you got a family to support. You got yourself to support.
Yeah.
You've got to do something. You know, you can't just, you know.
Well, you can't live off the royalties anymore because there are none.
There are none.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, let me go off on a tangent real quick with you. Like, you're still doing the record business. I mean, this has got
to
be.
I'm trying to get out.
Well, I'm just. It's got to be.
I just want to paint houses. I just
want to paint houses. to go from 1988 at Enigma to now. I mean, it's. Much different. I mean,
oh God! Yeah, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking with a friend last night about there's some video came on, like an ad or something, and the song used was "Every Rose Has Its Thorn" from Poison, which I fucking hate that song anymore. I can't stand it.
You've heard it a few times.
I've heard
it.
I mean, I can hear just switching subjects slightly. I can hear "You Shoot Me All Night Long." Every fucking day for the rest of my life and not get tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, it's a great song. Every Rose, though, comes on, immediately turn this.
I never liked that song. No. It always irked me for some reason.
I'm getting to this. With that, it was our only number one single.
I do too.
The only number one single we had at Enigma.
It was a big song.
And Bill and Wes, the two brothers that owned the company, threw the party to end all parties for that record, for the charting position. What did we do? 2 million records, 2 million copies of the single.
Right.
Wow.
You know, and of course we charted at number one. Mm-hmm. You can now chart on Billboard if you sell 300 fucking CDs a week.
Ugh. Yeah.
I've had so many bands chart on Billboard,
mm-hmm.
and we always black out the numbers sold, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it looks so bad.
Yeah.
But hey, we have a charting single or a charting album.
Don't take that much anymore.
No. 300
and is it still trending just down. It's at no little
no
rise
swing. I mean it you know hills and valleys but the hills are very tiny.
So the four of us should throw something together really just shitty and throw it against the wall and you know get all of our friends and family to buy it and end up on Billboard.
Exactly there you go
acapella version.
Yeah.
See, Gene Simmons, Rock Isn't Dead.
Rock Isn't Dead. It's just...
We sold 300 copies.
It's in pain. It's got a broken knee.
It's on life support.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So Bang Tango, we'll see what happens. I mean, purely a passion project because they're not...
Now, where do you think they're going to play? I mean, they'll play...
Club tour, probably with probably a...
Do you think they'll do an actual tour, or you think they'll just do...
If they do a tour,
couple shows in L.A., Vegas, and that's it?
It'll be like a Faster Pussycat or L.A. Guns type tour, I'm sure. Yep, like a co-headliner.
Yep.
Depends on how much vacation they have built up.
That's true.
I didn't even think about that, but they all have jobs. They're all painting houses.
Yeah. Mark Knight, you're going to finish painting that house before we go on the road, damn it.
Brian Forsyth, I'm sorry I brought that up.
Wait, wasn't he doing billboards or was he painting houses? Who was the one doing billboards?
Billboards.
Sorry, I had it wrong.
That's okay.
There's somebody else painting houses, though.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of guys painting houses.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Pay them bills.
Yep.
All right, so...
nothing wrong with it.
So next story, Ozzy Osbourne to be joined by Marilyn Manson for rescheduled 2020 North American tour dates.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no opinion on that. I mean,
no opinion?
I like both. I don't love both. I used to love Ozzy. But
I love that he's calling it No More Tours. No More Tours.
Two, yeah. Two or
14. I think it's No More Tours 14. Ugh. Maybe 27.
Man, I don't know, man. I haven't really gotten into Marilyn Manson in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I like him.
Hey, I like Manson.
I've seen them, and they were
freaking
really
love
good.
Marilyn Manson. Yeah. Back
I saw him last summer with Zombie, and he was horrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he sounded so bad. It was just bad. It was bad.
I've heard that he's gotten really bad off of drugs.
I picked up his last album thinking, you know, it's Marilyn Manson.
The album was good.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I didn't care for the album.
Everything he's done, I've always liked.
Didn't think that were that great. I always go back to, you know, the Mechanical Animals album.
Yeah,
that's a phenomenal fucking album. Yeah. Love that album.
Groundbreaking album.
Yeah.
And even the one before that, the Antichrist Superstar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lunchboxy
and then a few albums after that were pretty good, and then it just kind of dropped off for me. See, he doesn't seem to rock as hard as he used to. Doesn't bring in the guitars as much, I don't think, you know?
He's trying to be avant-garde, I guess.
Yeah. Artsy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading his autobiography. It was called The Long Hard Road Out of Hell.
Yeah.
Reading the whole thing, going, wow, he's got what a fucked up life he's lived. And then finding out later it's all bullshit.
Right.
And he even admitted to, he's like, oh, it's all made up.
Yeah. I got that.
It's fucking lame.
What do you think of the new Ozzy single?
I like it.
I do too.
I don't think it's bad. I don't like where it goes into the modern rock part with the oh. Yeah. I don't like that part. Yeah. The rest of it sounds pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
I kept seeing posts on Facebook. It's awful. It's brilliant. It's awful. It's brilliant.
No, it's in between.
It's in between.
I was kind of shocked Zach didn't play on it.
Yeah, he didn't. I guess he doesn't play on the album at all.
No.
So that's what I got out of it. I love it. Any new Ozzy to me that's great news. You know,
yeah.
I take it every day if I can.
Yeah.
Miss Zach Wilde in the band. The guitars, I thought, were kind of wimpy a little.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where Zach Wilde kind of adds that punch to them Ozzy songs. And man, Ozzy auto tuning.
There's a lot of auto tuning.
I always loved Ozzy's voice. You know, yeah. I love listening to the old albums before there was such a thing as auto tuning.
Yeah.
You know, and the way Ozzy's pure voice was. Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, I get it. He's getting older, and it's not the same anymore. But auto tunes. I just hate it. I just hate it because I miss that. My favorite bands. You put in the CD or listen to the album, and you hear their voices recorded pure the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Not robotic. You know.
Yeah.
And I miss
but that's
those
the best
days.
You're going to get from him these days.
I guess so.
He can't
sing
anymore.
The same argument as Paul Stanley thing. What would you rather have? You know, singing the tracks and sounding good, or not singing the tracks and sounding like shit.
But would you rather? I was thinking about this too when the new single came out. Would you rather have Ozzy just releasing new music or doing live shows?
I take releasing new music.
I would too. I don't want to see him live.
I don't really have any interest in seeing him live anymore.
Yeah.
Those days are gone for me.
Because I feel like Sharon's just wheeling his ass out there to make more money.
Exactly.
If it was up to him, he would have retired years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to be.
As long as you can clap and stomp
and throw a bucket of water on people.
Yep. Yep.
Well, they said that
they, over the years, they just put less and less water in the bucket.
They said the guitar playing is Andrew Watt, who was in California Breed with
Blake Hughes. He's a hell of a guitar player. Yeah. That California Breed album's badass.
And Duff McKagan on bass and Chad Smith on drums.
Nice.
So it's an all-star lineup.
Okay, I guess. Cool. Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. I kind of got an Alice Cooper vibe off of that new song. It sounds a little bit almost like the Blackout era from Alice Cooper, like early 80s Alice Cooper.
Yeah. I could see that.
Except for the, oh, I hate that part. If they would just remove that part, I'd like the song a lot better. That part sucks. But that's just my opinion, of course. Okay. Next story. Phil Anselmo says it would be a great honor if Pantera were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I mean, think that Pantera's got a shot at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Someday.
No. I mean, I'd love to see it, but I don't.
The road.
Yeah. I think it'll happen because of Dime's legacy. With Dime getting killed, and I hate to view it this way, but this is the way the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. Like, what's a good story that will sell tickets to this show?
Yeah.
Dime's tragedy would sell tickets to, like, if they did a reunion performance with Zach on guitar or something like that.
Which they shouldn't do.
Because,
but now you don't have Vinny either.
Right.
So now you only have half the band left. So.
And that's always kind of sad to me, too, because Dimebag dying the way he did. I mean, he was legendary amongst us, metal fans, the people that actually knew who Pantera was.
Mm-hmm.
But when he died, it kind of catapulted his name and image onto another level, where he became more of a pop culture icon, right. where you can see some kid wearing a Dime shirt and have no idea, only know, you know, because, you know, that's the way it goes. When famous people die, they become legendary. That's like the Doors. They did all right. They sold a lot of albums. Jim Morrison died. Those sales went through the fucking roof, you know? Yeah. And so it's always kind of a bummer that, yeah, it's great that they'd get into the Hall of Fame. Would they get into the Hall of Fame? And I'm talking like 30 years from now or whatever. Would they get into the Hall of Fame if not for the way Dime died?
That's what I'm saying. Right. They wouldn't. Yeah.
No. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
It made them a bigger story.
Yeah.
And I hate that's a sad reality, but it's true.
You know, out of all the you know, icons that we've lost over years, like you mentioned Lemmy and all earlier, Dio, for me, it's every time I hear Pantera, it's still it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I guess closer to the way we did lose Dime, like, it hurts more. Like, it's still like, wow, like, we'll never get to see Pantera again.
Yeah. There was a guy that worked with me. He was since passed away. A guy named Jason Morito, who lived in Dallas, who knew the guys, who went to the clubhouse, who, you know, they were all family. And he was, I can't remember where he was, but he couldn't get online. And he's calling me like midnight going, get on your computer. I think Dime got shot. He's dead. He's something. I don't know what's going on. I'm talking to people. And he was talking to the guy that was running the Pantera website he was good friends with. He's hearing stories. Other people are hearing stories. I'm Googling stuff.
Right.
I'm posting on Facebook. I just heard Dime got shot in Ohio. You know, can anybody chime in? I got friends freaking out. What's going on? And people are like, I've got, you know, like 6,000 comments on that going, no, please. And and all this. Yeah. But Jason is like calling me like every 20 minutes with an update on what he's hearing.
Wow.
Because he had friends in the crew, you know, like the drum tech. I forgot his name now. Shit. Like the drum tech was like as famous as the guys in Pantera.
Oh, was it the Cat?
Yeah.
They're like the only band, other than Kiss, they're the only band where their roadies are almost as famous as
right.
they are.
Yeah. And he was calling Jason. He and Jason were really good friends.
Yeah.
So he's calling Jason.
And he got blown up, too.
Yep.
He lived through it, though.
Yep, he lived through it.
Yeah.
Yep, he was calling Jason. So.
What a fucked up thing.
Well, how about like that? I mean, that whole thing when they talked about it on the VH1 Behind the Music. I mean, just the reality of it is devastating alone. But hearing them guys' firsthand accounts of what happened is so devastating.
I think I had like crashed out early that night and I woke up the next, it's like a 9/11 thing where you don't forget where you were. And I was living out in Laverne at the house we started the show at. And I got up and I used to leave, CNN would usually be left on my home screen and you know, it'll refresh. And I wake up in the morning and it snowed outside. I remember that too. And it was cold. And I walked into the dining room area where that computer was. And it was the front. It was right there on the screen.
Wow!
And I must have paced my living room for like an hour straight, just trying to wrap my head around it.
Yeah,
right.
I couldn't believe it. It just totally freaked me out.
Yep.
What about you?
Were
you at home when you found out?
I was at home when I found out. Pretty much the same thing. You know, I can't believe it.
Yeah,
it's terrible. Never going to see Pantera again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to see him the one time.
But all the talk of putting Zach in and now who, you know, who the drummer might be is just BS.
Well, with Vinny gone.
Now you can't
with
do
Vinny
it.
With Vinny gone, kind of I think that is.
They should have did it with Zach, I think.
I think
it would have been nice.
Tarnished the legend.
Well, and there's still the thing, I mean, because the conversation on that still goes on today, and it wasn't just a couple of weeks ago when Zach was saying, you know, myself, Rex Brown, and Phil go out and do a Pantera tribute.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you go in it saying, this is a tribute to Pantera.
It's a different thing.
That's different.
As long as they don't call it Pantera.
I think at one time they might have said, you know, this is Pantera featuring Zach Wilde, you know, and that's kind
of
iffy.
There was talk of that, too.
That wouldn't work.
But if tribute, you go honestly saying this is a tribute to Pantera, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
And we'd probably go see it.
I wouldn't mind.
I agree.
Doing that.
Who do you put on drums?
I think it'd be cool to see Charlie Benante from Anthrax.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
That'd be good.
I see that.
I like that.
Because they had a lot of connection to Dime, too.
Yeah.
So Charlie on drums and Zach on guitar.
I like that. Yeah.
That'd be a hell of a lineup.
I got chills thinking about it.
Yeah, Charlie could handle that, but no problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it.
All right. So now we move into the Kiss portion of the set.
You want to, is Kiss the last of it?
Well, Kiss and then our friend Bob.
Okay.
He's your friend.
Give me your
short one.
Okay, cool.
This is a little bit older, but right now, Ugly Kid Joe singer Whitfield Crane is embarking on his first ever solo tour. He's playing songs from, of course, Ugly Kid Joe, Another Animal, Medication, Life of Agony, Yellow Cake, The Richards Crane Project. He's doing all these things.
U.S.
Freaking
tour?
Awesome. Only in the U.K.
He never comes to America. they will never do another American tour. It's crazy.
In related news, Ugly Kid Joe's working on a new album.
Yeah.
We may be allowed to buy it here in the United States. We're holding out to see if we will be allowed to listen, even listen to it.
They call the next album American Embargo.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Damn it, Ugly Kid Joe.
There's been enough time that's passed now that there actually would be a demand for them to tour, I think. They could do one
probably.
Tour.
Yeah, they could do a tour, yeah.
I think so.
They need to just fucking do it.
I mean, that's the whole idea, like starve us out, right?
That's what it feels
starve
like.
Starve us out and then eventually do it. To the point where it's like nothing will keep me from seeing this show because they're never coming back again.
When is
lifetime.
The last time they played here in America?
Probably back
over
in
10
the 90s.
Years, right?
Yeah.
At least 10 years.
Yeah, at least. Before that, I think.
So I should just book them for Rockin' Pod, right?
Hey,
that's the best idea you've ever had.
There you go.
I love it.
Oh, God.
They probably aren't that much.
Can't wait. Yeah, can't wait for all the foreign flights I'm going to have to pay for. Hey, Klaus, you're going to have to find your own way here.
Is he back in Switzerland now? Or?
I think Germany, I think.
Oh, in Germany.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember. He was the one who I talked to get that interview lined up. And,
right.
And he came back and he was like, I can't make the interview. Is Whitfield okay? I'm like, yeah, I think it's okay. Talk to the lead singer.
I guess.
It's funny.
Another thing I saw, I guess this must be like the anniversary of it happening back in 1989. I saw faroutmagazine.com in the UK had done a retrospective of the time that Axl Rose got in a fist fight with David Bowie. Remember the legend of that?
I don't know. I don't think I ever heard this.
I don't remember that at all.
No.
I thought you were a fan.
I'll read a little bit of it to you. At the time, Guns N' Roses were well on their way to becoming a major league band. They were announced as a warm-up for the Rolling Stones at the Cat House. David Bowie was friends with Slash's mother dating back years,
right.
So like when Slash was a little bitty kid. David Bowie has got a reputation for wanting to steal his friends and contemporaries' girlfriends.
Oh.
He's known for that.
True,
and another thing he's known for is always pinching. Like if you bring your girlfriend around, he's going to pinch her ass. He's going to do it right in front of you. You're going to be like, that's just Dave. You know, that's just Dave doing his thing.
At least you're Axl Rose, apparently.
Right. So I guess the story is that they're all hanging out at the studio together, and Guns N' Roses is working on something, and he's like blatantly going after Aaron Everly.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
The quote is the best. So Axl gets wind of this, and he's pissed. He's gonna fight David Bowie. So he goes outside, chases him down, punches are thrown. And it all ends up with Axl chasing Bowie and screaming the last line befitting any aforementioned daily drama. He said, I'm going to kill you, Tin Man.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's great.
So then they're doing the tour, or they're doing the shows where they're opening for the Rolling Stones, and Jeff Beck and Mick Jagger come around to him, you know, and they're kind of standoffish, and they come around and go, heard you got into a scrap with David Bowie, huh? And he's like, yeah, and he tells him his side of the story, how it all went down. And he said that they just kind of turn to each other and start talking, and they're just bitching about David Bowie. Yeah, fucking David Bowie. Pinched my girlfriend on the ass all the time. Yeah, he did that to my wife, too, you know, about time somebody beat his ass over it.
Wow.
I'm going to kill you, Tin Man.
I'm going to kill you. Is that because of the whole tin machine thing, I guess?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, wow.
My sister was a huge, huge David Bowie fan in the 70s. And where I grew up, it was Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. And we grew up two blocks from the legendary Tower Theaters, the album David Bowie Live at the Tower. My sister used to work at the Tower Theater back in the early 70s when she was in high school. And when Bowie would come to town, she ended up, because she was working there, she met him. And ended up hanging out with him, doing a lot of cocaine with him, a lot of drugs. When he would come back into Philly, he would get hold of her and they would hang out. She used to have all this like memorabilia from him. So I remember growing up and having seen all this signed stuff. He had bought her roses and stuff like that. So I never asked, like, did you do anything with Bowie? But there was, I know, a lot of drugs and a lot of partying that went on.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never fully clicked with him. I like a few songs, but I just To me, I always thought he was overrated.
I thought he had some brilliant people stuff, off of right. And then some, what the fuck?
I just don't see the
there's a lot of what the fuck stuff for sure. Yeah.
But there's a lot of
Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars is just fucking style. Yeah. Come on. No, it's one of the greatest albums of all time.
I like that.
That's amazing.
I
can
listen to some like Rebel, no problem. Bob my head in the car driving, cool, you know, turn it up. Some of that other stuff, it's like, I don't even know if this is a song.
Yeah. Stuff thrown together. That's what happens.
Artistic statement that I just do not understand.
And maybe that's part of my issue is he got so experimental at times where it's just kind of like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I mean, a Frank Zappa territory.
Well, and, and some of that experimental stuff, I'll see people just rave about it. And I'm just like, no.
Yeah, I don't get it.
What am I missing?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I think they're doing that just to be cool.
Maybe. Yeah, and I think maybe some of his diehard fans bug me more than he does, but it's just like a cult type thing where, like, when he died, all of a sudden, everyone was a massive diehard David Bowie fan. I'm like, really? Were you people really that big a fan, or is it cool to just say you were?
Yep.
I don't know. It just kind of bugged me.
I think it was cool to say you were because I mean, he obviously had a huge following.
Yeah.
Sure,
he did. I think they were there just for the encore.
Yeah.
You know, the last eight songs of the night or whatever, you know?
Right.
So.
But Axl Rose punching David Bowie. That's funny.
I kill you, Tim.
That's awesome.
Hey, I got one, Bay, that you would appreciate. This happened on Decibel Geek Facebook page a couple of weeks ago when our Facebook man, Adam Cox, posted it. What's one album everyone should hear? And we got a picture from Exotic Adrian Street.
Nice.
The old school professional wrestler from
the UK. He used to make my tights.
Holding up his record saying this one.
That's awesome. Okay.
And now I just go around to my wrestling friends that would appreciate that.
That is like, awesome.
Wow, that's wild.
Guess who follows Decibel Geek Podcast? Exotic Adrian Street. You
know, he sent me a friend request like a year ago, and I totally marked out. I'm like, I used to buy my tights from him back in the day. But he used to make them for me. Yeah. Yeah. That dude never got any respect here in the States.
No. But he was way ahead of his time.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I didn't think tights would get brought up in the discussion.
Well, you got this is Decibel Geek. Wrestling.
Most people probably won't even know who the hell Exotic Adrian Street is when you mention
it. Sounds familiar.
I say that to certain friends that I have that would get that. Otherwise, everybody else, what? Say, Exotic who?
These two are going to start the Turnbuckle Geek podcast.
There you go. Awesome. There you go. Let's do it.
Awesome. Any other stories you want to hit
That's
on?
That's what I got.
All right, so let's get into the Kiss portion. First thing, Kiss canceled their entire Australian tour just days before it was supposed to start. According to them, Paul Stanley has a terrible flu and additional infection and requiring complete vocal rest and medication, which, like, it's kind of funny that you need vocal rest when you don't actually sing.
Right.
But not to be a dick, but, well, I guess it is to be a dick. But
the tapes have the flu.
Yeah.
Machine broke.
But I don't know. And then something that came out the other day, like, you know, he does this Soul Station side project.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they're making a record. And one of the guys in Soul Station posted a photo on Instagram, like the day that they canceled the tour, of Paul sitting in the control room with him.
Mm.
So now Kiss fans, especially the Australian ones, are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so, but you don't know. That picture could have been taken weeks before.
Usually when people post pictures from studio, it's right there.
Yeah. Like share,
But in fairness, I mean, it might be the studio at Paul's house, and he might have come down just to hear like 5 minutes of material and went back to bed.
He's like, fuck, I gotta get dressed.
But apparently they're still gonna do the concert for Sharks with the other three guys.
Three piece, right?
Yeah. And a crowd of eight people. They only sold eight tickets to it.
What is this, a Vinnie Vincent birthday bash with Sharks?
Bam!
You're way overestimating the attendance.
That's eight too many.
Eight too
many.
And Kiss isn't serving salad or anything. So, apparently that's something to do with Airbnb. I think is the Shark thing or Travel Channel. I can't remember what.
Are they sponsoring it?
I don't know. No. Well, yeah, I think it's an Airbnb thing. I know it's weird.
So, owner, what do they do? I mean. Do you think Tommy Thayer plays at all, or do they have somebody Corbetting behind the curtain?
For Tommy?
Yeah. No, for Paul.
Oh, for Paul.
For the guitar parts.
I don't know.
Doesn't mean you could do Gene songs when you play live. It's a three-piece like that, but I mean...
They did that before, didn't they? Play a show without Paul?
Yeah, when Paul had that heart issue.
Yeah.
It was like a show in San Jose, and Gene Simmons' Family Jewels crew was there to catch the whole thing. And but although have you watched any footage of that show? Gene Simmons is not a band leader. It was he was just like, you look like you're having fun. Come up on stage and sing with us. It was just like completely unorganized.
It's kind of like his solo tour.
His solo tour is kind of the same way. People are like, we don't want to hear you talk for fucking 10 minutes. Play another song.
Yeah.
Paul's at least good at keeping the show on track. It's
story time.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, some people are like wondering why they didn't just postpone the tour rather because of the way the statement raises, it's canceled. It's done.
Yeah.
Unless they already got the follow-up. Ones they announced, like the actual final legacy
they
tour,
do have,
where that's already set in place.
But they have the final show in New York set for 2021.
That's kind of surprising. I mean, Australia was so good to them over the years. Yeah. It was big for them.
I'm predict because they haven't gone
kept
on
them alive in the 80s.
Yeah,
they
absolutely
haven't gone on sale with that last show yet. I bet you they delay it. They add the Australian. They're not going to leave Australia hanging.
No, they can't do that.
It's too much money to be made.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why ignore?
I don't see it happening.
Just go back.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to wrap up with Bob Kulick today.
Oh, boy.
I also heard Vinnie Vincent's open to playing with Kiss again.
Yeah, me too. I am as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime they want to call me, I'm ready to jump on stage. Fucking idiot.
Maybe Vinnie can fill in for Paul.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
Well, he can sing better.
That would be something.
See, I was trying to avoid that guy getting brought up, but no such luck.
It can never happen.
Yeah, never happen.
I'll never get that guy out of my way.
It's the Cusano geek.
Decibel
Cusano.
But yeah, I don't think anyone in this room is going to the $500 Merry Metal Christmas.
Oh, I am.
You are?
Hell okay, no.
Have fun. You want to go to SIR and split the ticket with me?
No, thanks.
We had a great plan hatched that we were going to try to be security under disguise at the birthday bash.
He's going to get a fake mustache and everything.
I met him a year ago, year and a half ago, at Shore Theater up in Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, what did I fucking pay for that? I think it was $80 I paid.
For his autograph?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What was the experience like?
You know what? He was actually pretty. I mean, he was very nice and sincere.
Good to the
and
fans.
Yeah, he was. I was shocked. I was really shocked.
Just don't go into
the fans
then.
Until you order something from him.
Yeah.
I was a little freaked out that he had pillows and blankets of himself. I was weirded out by that.
Pillows and blankets.
Yeah.
He was selling pillows and blankets of himself.
Still
I was
selling that.
Yeah.
Oh, and I can add this in because this just got added today after I did these notes. Apparently, they announced on his website that they're re-releasing Speedball Jam next year.
Why not?
And you can get only 1,000 copies on CD, and you can get it comes with an autographed 8x10 and an oversized guitar pick, $250.
Holy shit.
Wow.
For a CD that contains the worst album ever created.
Right.
Should be like a bonus tape cassette and vinyl LP too, for $250.
Yeah, $250.
If I don't send it to you, I'll send you two of them.
Yeah. God,
I remember you were all up my ass for the Guitarmageddon stuff that I couldn't find.
Oh yeah.
Remember?
Did you ever find that stuff?
No. I must have thrown it out. Or
yeah, he had like demo unreleased demos from.
Oh really?
Because we paid. Not me, but. Enigma.
Oh, yeah. You were with Enigma at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually walked, picked up the demo, put it in my pocket, walked out of Curtis Beck's office, the A&R guy that signed him.
Wow.
So, oh, that's funny.
So I told, he hit me up, or I don't know how they even came about, but he.
Well, I put two and two together. I was like, you worked for Enigma. Did you work at that time?
Yeah,
and he was like, yeah, I think I still have some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll never forget Robert Fleischman in that interview saying that, Enigma's already paid him in advance. He's recording the album on their dime.
Yeah.
And then he's calling other record companies trying to offer them the album.
Yeah, I think
and Robert's like,
Virgin.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
If I remember, Virgin was one of the things that he called, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't a part of that because it was a whole different hit. I did the PR there and we all did some A&R at the label. I tried to sign Wildside. Tried my ass off to sign Wildside. And Tough and other bands, so I didn't get to deal with that yet.
Yeah.
But like I said, I saw the among the stacks and stacks and stacks of demos that were on Curtis Beck's desk, like Vinnie Vincent stuck out. Like thumbing through stuff. It was like right in the middle-ish somewhere. So I couldn't just grab it. And
was this when the company went under?
No, it was right. It wasn't before. It wasn't too long before that.
Yeah.
So he put us under. Let's just go with that. No. No, no, no. He did not put the label on it.
Here comes the lawsuit. Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
They did help.
There's our blabbermouth headline for that.
Vinny Vincent, bankrupt Enigma Records. Yeah.
Former record executive shares how Vinny Vincent bankrupted Enigma Records.
That will be on fucking Alternative Nation, though.
Oh, yeah.
Metalhead.
Metalhead right Zone. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't ever read anything from those websites.
Nope.
It's all bullshit.
It's all clickbait bullshit. Mm. So yeah, just erase all that.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
So let's move on to another wonderful human being. Bob,
I gotta go now, by the way. Yeah. I'm late for a doctor appointment. Sorry.
A doctor appointment on Sunday.
Yeah. In Nashville, where I don't live.
All right. So Bob Kulick has essentially lost his mind, it seems like.
Seems like.
Did an interview with Mitch LaFon that put ours to shame. We thought he acted a little strange on our interview. Good Lord, he really went off the reservation in this one.
Yeah.
My favorite line from this one was Mitch was asking about there was I think Bob said he wants to do some Christmas metal record or something. And Mitch goes, well, do you have a certain deadline for this album? And Bob goes, I don't have deadlines. I make headlines.
Oh, wow.
He actually said that.
That's a Bob Kulick t-shirt right
there. Yeah. And he's gone crazy on his brother and Kiss over – and this goes back to the Indie Kiss Expo that happened earlier this year. So Keith LaRue, who runs Kiss's online presence.
Great guy.
Basically their assistant.
Yeah.
He has a business with Steve Steerwalt, Kiss Army Warehouse. It's right. Not a Kiss company. Right. It's a side business.
Yeah.
Bob Kulick cannot seem to understand this point. So they got together and they had designed Kulick Brothers merchandise. And I think Bob had a table that he was selling the stuff at the expo. And then – so I think Keith and Steve had bought a certain amount of this stuff to resell on their website.
Okay.
And Bob's just gone crazy saying that Keith and Steve and Kiss are aiming to rip him off and take away all his money and, you know, that they owe him royalties and stuff for this merchant. How many people are going to buy a Kulick Brothers t-shirt and baseball hat? And I mean, I all respect to them, but
right.
It's not going to be a it's merchandise like a gold mine.
Yeah.
It's not worth all the trouble.
Show and getting one because you're excited because you just saw a good show.
Yeah. Exactly.
And also, Bruce has a restraining order out on Bob right now because I heard that Bob threatened him. And that goes back to the cruise because they did that first cruise performance together.
Which was phenomenal.
Everyone loved it.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently Bob was aiming to get a tour set up and was talking to promoters and getting numbers and everything. And then went back to Bruce and Bruce said, well, I talked to Paul and Gene about it and they don't think it's a good idea because they want me to keep it as an exclusive thing for the cruise. And Bob's just gone ballistic over that.
Makes sense from their standpoint.
Yeah. So, but then Bob's made all these ridiculous comments in these interviews, like talking about how he, you know, they should be paying him a ton of money for like his contribution to Kiss over the years. And like, and he got paid session musician money that you would get paid for that. But he thinks like there should be some giant bonus in it for him after all these years. And he did another interview with the Metal Voice, Jimmy Kay's show, and apparently claimed that he's pushing that he thinks that Kiss should hire him to write a song called End of the Road and record it and let him produce.
Right.
And Kiss is like, no. We have no
interest. So it'd be a song by Bob Kulick about Kiss's history.
Produced by Bob Kulick.
Or produced by Bob Kulick.
Wow.
Wow, that's far out.
But
Kiss should also let us do that.
And Kiss to Vinny Vincent should. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
But he's like, I mean, he's gone crazy. He's trashed Bruce on Facebook. He's, you know, I heard, this is something I heard secondhand, so I don't know if it's true, but apparently when Kiss came through Vegas to do the end of the road stop there, Bob lives out there.
Yeah.
apparently Bob showed up at the arena during the day expecting to have tickets or whatever waiting for him. They didn't. He waited till a roadie let him in because somebody recognized him, walked up on stage, plugged into Paul's gear, and started playing on stage without permission.
What?
And they had to have him removed from the arena.
I didn't hear that.
That's what I heard it secondhand, so I can't say it's for real. But
that'd be weird if it was.
Whoa!
Yeah.
How could that even happen? Like, you got to get through 97 people to get to that stage.
But I mean, but he's well known in that circle, though.
Right.
I mean, I would think that
if they didn't know there was issues there, I could see him getting away with that.
Yeah.
Well, there's Bob. Where's he going? I don't worry about Bob.
Hey, Bob.
The guitar. Wait, what's he doing now? He's plugging in. Oh, shit.
And I've heard.
The question you got to ask, though, is what did he start playing?
Yeah, right.
What song did he start playing? Yeah.
All American Man.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't deny Bob Kulick for his contribution to KISS.
No, great player, right? Good player.
Still a never member of KISS.
Right.
Right.
You know?
I think it bugs him that Bruce is more recognized than
he is. If he had, and that's one of those things kind of double-edged, if he had the foresight to know, you know, what his contribution would be, playing on Killers, playing on KISS Alive 2 on the studio tracks,
Paul's solo album,
he might have been able to say, hey, you know, these are going to sell throughout the years a lot of money. I think you should pay me more for doing this.
Yeah.
But then KISS could always at that time go, okay, cool. Well, we'll just get somebody else. Thanks, Bob.
Right.
So thousand guitarists.
In that situation, you know, in the moment, in the day, back in the 70s, you're grateful to be able to do it.
Sure.
You sign the paper to say nobody has to know that this is an Ace Frehley playing these songs. You know, I won't say anything.
Yeah.
I'll take whatever you're willing to pay me to do it. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right.
So later on, you can't come back and say, you sons of bitches.
Later on, but a lifetime away, you can't go back and do that.
Well, exactly.
You know?
And he's trashing Bruce left and right on Facebook. Like, people are making comments, and he's just like, Bruce is just a cover band guitar player. And he's not like he wasn't an original member. He's like, Bob seems to think.
Funk or Ankiss.
Ankiss. Yeah. Like, I think Bob seems to have the position that I was going to get the job until Ace showed up, so therefore that makes me more credible than Bruce, who replaced Ace. I don't know why you would look at it that way.
Was going to almost quite cut.
And he goes on and on about being a Grammy-winning producer for the Motorhead track. Motorhead won the Grammy. He produced it, but he didn't get a statue. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't.
So it's like semantics that he's trying to twist around.
I'm a Grammy-winning producer.
Yeah.
I produced something that
won a Grammy.
Won a Grammy.
Yeah. And it's Motorhead doing a cover song. It's not even that big a deal, really. I mean, I guess I could see where he's coming. I mean,
it is.
Yeah, but raves about, you know, playing with Diana Ross. It's like, but it's one of those things, like, be proud of your accomplishments. But if you're so proud of your accomplishments, why are you so bitter?
Don't throw him out there like you do and don't be so bitter. Exactly. I mean, he did a great job with the production of the Motorhead track.
Sure.
You know, but
I think he's a really good producer.
Is he going through like financial troubles or something where it's just like making him snap?
I mean, you know, I don't know.
I think there might be some health stuff going on there. I think these are all feelings he's had for a long time.
Yeah,
but him going so over the top talking about it is there's something wrong there.
Well, his mom passed away several months back.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when he snapped, quote unquote.
Okay.
So I think he and his mom were very close. I think Bruce and his, you know, the three of them were very close.
Yeah.
So I think that's when it all went to hell
for
him because his dad's gone. I mean, I haven't spoken to the guy in almost 2 years.
Well, I wish he didn't make this into a public squabble.
That's
the saddest part of it. That's a family.
Yeah,
it's a family issue, and he's dragging it out in front of everybody.
Yeah,
you know, nobody should know any of that stuff.
So, which is worse, the Kulick brothers' argument or the Robinson brothers, who have now reunited?
Well, I think the Robinson brothers are going to make a lot more money.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Kulick brothers one is sadder, or whatever. The Robinson one is, to me, a joke. I don't think the tour's going to last. I really, 6 shows in, I think it'll close.
There's going to be issues.
Those two
don't like each other.
No, at all.
It'd be like Oasis getting back together.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier.
It's not going to be
the American version of Oasis.
If you're not doing it because of family, and if you're not doing it because of legacy, and if you are doing it for the money, then
you're
probably not going to last.
Probably not.
No.
Well, interesting.
But hopefully You know, I'd like to see Bruce and Bob reconcile this, but I just, it's just really bizarre the way Bob's acting, and it's sad. It really is. Yeah,
I've known the guy for 30 years.
Yeah.
And we met in the studio with Wasp on the Crimson Idol tour, a record.
Mm-hmm.
And
his work on that's great.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's been, like, he and I were the best of friends up until basically I put his Skeletons in the Closet record out.
Right.
And then he kind of went a little haywire. And then it just went, you know, downhill from there. But like, you know, he was the greatest guy for, you know, close to 30 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
26, 7 years. So I don't know what's next. I mean, well, like I said, I think his mom passing away had something to do with it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I don't know what else was there. But it's really a sad thing.
Yeah, it is.
He was always like such a nice guy.
Yeah.
There's other things that you can hear people talk about or whatever from his past, but I never saw a bad side of him. And I was with him. I was around him a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I did PR for records he produced. He got me the gigs. You know, I think we did some Cleopatra stuff together. Because he did like 9,000 records, Brian over at Cleopatra,
all the tribute albums.
Yeah, he produced all those and played guitar on most of them. And Bruce is actually on quite a few of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
When we met in Vegas, we weren't living in Vegas yet to discuss, you know, putting the Skeletons record out. He's like, no matter what, we stay best of friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And then, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean,
I guess I have to look and see what the Yankees are doing.
Oh, man.
Bob's mood seemed to be in coordinate with how the Yankees are doing.
Did you hear our interview with him?
Huh?
Did you hear our interview with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he kept diverting everything to baseball.
It was the baseball stuff.
It was so strange.
You sent it to me. You're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. I didn't even want to put it out. And I was like, I can make this entertaining. Yeah. And he did.
I said, what are you talking about? He said, just like, I think it was all in caps. Just listen. I'm like, okay. Because I usually don't. I like skim an interview.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we set up so many interviews with some of these, you know, those type of level characters. And I can't go back and listen to them.
Right.
But I listened to the whole damn thing.
Yeah, it turned into a Yankees podcast for that week. It was
Billy Martin podcast.
So odd. Oh, man.
Fucking hysterical.
Well, that's all the stories I have this week. Anybody got anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think I've
my filet mignon, guys.
Well, Bay, I know you haven't done a Totally Driven Entertainment show in a while, so is that coming back relatively soon, you think?
I hope so. Let's knock on some wood. I'm hoping in the new year. Actually, I was just talking to my co-host Nick last night. We always do a year-end show, award show, where we go through like best guests. We have all these categories we go through and we do that. And I said to him, I'm like, you know what, let's just do that for the end of the year, even though we haven't done a show since August. Like, we'll do that, and you know, we'll figure out what's coming in the new year in 2020.
Right.
So,
and you guys were the contest winners for the Rock and Pod Expo.
Right? Yo, you know what? Yeah, actually,
I got him in on that. I pulled him in.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for that happening, like that catapulted so much stuff in my life. I was telling Aaron earlier as we were sitting outside. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't end up moving here. I wouldn't have.
Oh, really?
Like it put me into.
So I'm really sorry for introducing you guys.
You, my ex-wife would not like you guys.
Awesome. We're the enablers.
Yeah, totally. So thank you.
Thank you for
doing an amazing job with everything. I had such a good time there. And
did you know Tommy Dreamer was there that day?
Where?
He was at Rock and Pod. He was staying at the same hotel. I didn't find this out until later when I saw a picture. My buddy had did a selfie with him out front. And I said, son of a gun, if I'd have known Tommy Dreamer was there,
I had no idea.
I grabbed him and drug him in.
Yeah.
Because how long has it been since you've seen Tommy Dreamer?
Actually, not that long. I ran into him a lot in Philly because he would promote a lot of stuff in Philly. So like,
Listeners don't know, maybe about a year ago, I saw him. If you're a wrestling fan and you go way back into the old Extreme Championship Wrestling history, You'll find this man. Mm-hmm. You once played the role of Chubby Dudley.
Yeah, many years ago. Dudley, yeah.
Family.
Yeah. 95, 96, so 24, 25 years ago, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So now you know why I love him so much. Wrestling. All
yeah, absolutely, man. A lot of good times.
And Dave, what do you have coming up with your group?
Well, we have these meetings out here about the tribute bands, and we need to get a band called Hell's Addiction on. Did you get that yet?
Hell's Addiction.
Yeah, we talked about it a few months ago.
I'm way behind. I have not.
Kill this guy.
Well, being honest, at least.
I know. It's,
I could say, oh, I opened it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I'm sure it is.
But yeah, we're working with, we're working on them right now. They got a new record that they got coming out spring. They just did the SO. They've done a ton of festivals. They did Download a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But they've done SOS this year. Oh, they're based in Britain.
Okay.
So it's all English stuff. The band's called Hell's Addiction.
Hell's Addiction.
Yeah. They're doing Call of the Wild. They did Hard Rock Hell Sleaze. So they're doing really well. They're like one of our big pushes right now.
Cool.
Yeah. And early next year, my vanity label, or Shock, one of the divisions of it, is putting out the debut from Kings of Dust, which is Greg Chason from Badlands, Ryan McKay from Crash Street Kids. So
cool.
That's a great record. Can't wait for everybody to hear that. There's a single up right now on YouTube. But
nice. That's we'll play that on the way out.
Yeah, what are we going to do for the play out? We'll pick a song you want us to play out with.
Oh, crap, guys.
Well, one of your projects.
One of these bands.
I've got too many things going on. The Kings of Dust.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks.
I'm like, crap.
That's the news. We'll see you next week.
See you later.
Happens once each time a year. Friends get together and celebrate. Good welcome in. Happy times is us. Kindness tends to dominate the plate. It's all about the thought that counts. Which gifts are going round and round and round and round. But then it all disappears after the tinsel's been cleared. So keep the spirit. Turn Jekyll to Hyde. Where's the gratitude? Nice to have some of that back. Where's it all written in stone? 12 days just ain't that long. That feeling's where we should strive. So keep the spirit, keep the spirit alive. Remember all that it brings.
ship a piece of that holiday cheer. Bend on every breeze. Every year we're all fighting high. Just ship a piece of that holiday cheer.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.